Okay, welcome everybody. This is Creativity and Mission. I hope you're in the right place. I don't think it's amplified in any way, apart from we're going to have some interesting audio coming through the speakers from one of our speakers today. Maggie is here. She's very kindly available to translate into French if anybody needs that. Is there anybody here who would benefit from that? Maggie, it's great to have you here. Oh, you're going? It's going to be really good. My name's Rich Wilson. I'm just helping compare a little bit. I'm going to share a few things at the end. I work with students and churches in the UK and a little bit across Europe. And I'm with Danny. He's going to be sharing some things that he's up to in Ibiza with the Romani community. And we have Linda as well. Linda is hidden in the iPhone down there. She had to get a different flight, and Paul is going to introduce Linda and what Linda has to say. And we might just have to listen a little bit carefully because it's coming through the iPhone and that kind of weird microphone there, and then through the audio. And then hopefully at the end we'll have a bit of space maybe for others to share some of their creativity and mission and to ask any questions. So I'm looking forward to it. I've no idea what Linda's going to say from the phone, or indeed what Danny's going to say. And I've got a vague idea what I'm going to say. So why don't we start? I'm going to put the microphone, the recording, next to Linda, and we're going to go. Paul, why don't you just...
Okay. Linda's is... okay. This might work better. Does this work better? Yeah. Linda is much prettier than I. Just a backstory, very fast, because what's important is what she said. I met her 2 years ago in 24/7 in Madrid. She was sitting next to me in the worship the first night, and it was love at first sight. She is a person who lives in Mykonos, Greece, and when the whole refugee crisis started, found herself just for like a week in Samos, and from there, she basically, I told her last night, you went out on a limb with the Lord. You just gave him permission to use you. And that is the short and the long of it. And she actually had to go back because one of the people she's been taking care of was surprisingly arrested the other day and is in prison. And she's working with a human rights lawyer to get justice for him. So her flight left right now. There was a mix-up. So because of that, just before running to the train, she recorded this 15-minute chat with you, for you, from the disabled bathroom on the upstairs mezzanine. So I'll just pass the words to Linda. She really did pray, too, before this, that the Lord would speak to each and every person here present and interested in this topic. So that's, here's Linda.
So good to be here, except I'm not with you in person, which I'm deeply sorry about. I need to return back to Greece to...
Wow, came out more than okay. I think we should just pause for a moment. I don't know about you, I didn't know what to expect. I'd like us to pause, and I'd like us to turn into twos and threes, just say what stood out, what God highlighted to us, what resonated with us. And then I'd love us to pray for Linda and what she's doing and the work she's up to. And then we'll break state a bit and we'll hear from Danny.
Well, does anyone have any questions for Linda?
You got her email. And that Facebook group sounds great, doesn't it? So let's do that. Introduce yourself. Just say, what was it that stood out to you? What was God saying to you as you listened to Linda? And then let's just pray for her. So a couple of minutes.
Hello. Bonjour. I don't need any amplification, do I? We're all good. So my name is Danny. I live out in Ibiza with my wife, Liddy, my daughter, Asha, and the bump, the four-month-old bump, which is exciting. So the family will be extended next year. And we live just near a Romani gypsy community, which is based just outside the city walls. And for a long time before Lydia and I were on the scene, in fact, from when 24/7 first came to the island of Ibiza, there was a prayer that there would be a Christian presence and that around Sapenya, which is the area the gypsies live in. So Sapenya has been prayed for over a decade, and probably about, it was 3.5 years ago, we felt called to move out and love the Romani gypsy community because God does. And the prevalent attitude in Ibiza town, and it's quite common in lots of places with the Roma, is that, I mean, Ibiza's very free and loving, and the general sort of societal consensus is that the racism is wrong and discrimination against other people's cultures is wrong, but the gypsies are exempt because there are stereotypes, there are stigmas around the Romani. So they are really downtrodden. They are hated in many ways. They are blamed for a lot of problems. They are, where they're located geographically, it's hard to find and easy to forget, which is exactly the way the rest of Ibiza town quite likes it. About a third of the community were evicted from their homes in April, and they went peacefully, and it was recorded in the press that they went peacefully, and they went peacefully because they had guns on at the. We don't really have a remit of prayer and mission. It seems to be prayer as mission. We are very much aware, and have we're very much aware that it's a God project. We can't come in with our projects. The way of sort of we like to look at it, I suppose, is when we try on our in our strength, it's physically trying to open doors, and so much of stuff is relational. But in terms of doing stuff, if we go in on our strength, it's trying to open the doors and finding that we can't turn the handle. But when we are praying and seeking God's will and just praying and praying and praying, then God's automatically opening the doors. It's like they're automatic doors. It's really, as I say, it's really relational. So these sort of success stories that we, when we look back on the 3 years that we've been out there, seem really little in many ways. It's stuff that is going to take a really long time. It's stuff that we just trust God with because we don't know what it's going to look like. And it's stuff that's slow and deep. So it's been hard in some ways because when we sort of get the impulse to do stuff in our own strength, we've had options to. So we could have piggybacked into Sapenya, you know, through connections from other people that knew people and things like that. But we felt God say, no, wait, because I want you to go in as you, not on somebody else's reputation. So essentially, we moved out and we just started praying, prayer walking. And our remit was to learn Spanish and Catalan and to settle in as a family and pray. And essentially, that's why we're there. We're there because we believe prayer works. If we didn't believe prayer works, then there'd be absolutely no point in, we'd be somewhere else. And we pray as well because we can't profess that we believe in Jesus Christ and then think we know better than him, I suppose, is how I look at it. So even though we have temptations to sort of to just trying to push relationships, it doesn't work if it's just us running ahead of God. So we moved out and we started praying, prayer walking, and surrounding it sort of geographically with prayers, praying blessings, Isaiah 61 and 62. And slowly, over the years, bits of relationships started to form with some of the key Roma guys. So after 2 years, there was the first automatic door. Just before Christmas, we had built up a bit of a relationship with this one guy, Jose, and he was one of the key guys in Sapeña. And he said, we've got a Christmas present for your son. So, and he said, come and give it to us. I'll meet me at that bar, and if I'm not there, come into Sapeña. And we were like, well, that's incredible. Sort of an invite in. We'd been praying for an invite in. That's amazing, because they're very superstitious about their households and their homes. We went to the bar and he wasn't there, and let's do this. Let's walk into Sapeña. So we walked in and we met him halfway into Sapeña, and he said, come into my house. So we got invited into his house. This is my wife, these are my kids, the photos of the family. And relationship was just, he said, don't worry, you're friends of mine. Don't worry about what the other Romani guys think, you are friends of mine. So that was just incredible. And then we sort of maintain that relationship and then keep praying. Then the next big automatic door was April this year, and we found out that a load of them were going to be evicted. And we were thinking, we don't know them enough. We don't know them enough to be able to relate to them, and we're not ready for them to be evicted, thinking it's all about us. And then just on one night, I went for a drink at a bar, strategically, at the bottom of Sapeña. And Jose was there, and Jose introduced me to Chani. And Chani was, and even more, there's not really a hierarchy, but he's another key guy, introduced me to Tassio, who's a spokesperson, introduced me to Pampo. And with all three of them, I was able to say, God loves you, God loves you. Tassio said, we believe in God, but we think he's forgotten us. No, he hasn't forgotten you. We've been here for 2 years praying for you. And speak gospel truth to three of these key guys. And then from then, those relationships have blossomed. So now we've got Jose, we've got Chani, we've got Pampo. A third of them were evicted. And this wasn't necessarily an automatic doors moment, but something that was really quite poignant for me and for us was there was a demonstration. They organized a demonstration. Pampo worked his socks off, getting everything organized, getting banners with the Romani Gypsy flag on it. And it was a very peaceful demonstration just outside, saying, you know, this is unjust. You're giving us no support. You're just kicking us out of our homes, which is true. Where they live on is prime real estate. So basically, they were being evicted for greed and racism. So we were at the demonstration, and Asher started to make friends with Pampo's daughter, who's the same age. And they gave Asher a little flag. And Asher's my daughter, sorry. So 5 years old, and we were walking back for the demonstration, and Asher just said, I need to wave this flag really high so people can see that my friends are losing their homes. And, you know, that was quite emotional for us. And then she said, why isn't everybody looking? Why aren't people looking to know that my friends are losing their homes? And children are often so good at giving affection and so good at not prejudicizing. And it's a real lesson for us, for all of us. So I think that was a key moment. And one final sort of thing to share, I suppose. A lot of the guys who have been evicted, because they're very good at surviving, have just sort of crammed even more people into some of the houses that are still there, or they're staying in cars, or they're staying with friends, which actually makes their situation overall worse, because to the local authorities it looks like ostensibly there's no more street homelessness, so they can push on with another raft of evictions. Built up a good friendship with Pampo, and Pampo is the father of this girl who Asher was friends with. And Pampo and the girl's mother split up, and the girl's the girl and her mother moved to Barcelona, and Pampo was distraught, really, really drained from all the, you know, the emotion of it. And we were sitting together at the bar that I'd gone for a drink at strategically, and I said, Pampo, I'm just going to pray, if that's okay. I'm going to pray for you. You can keep your eyes open if you want. We can just pretend that we're sort of talking if you feel more comfortable, if you're so good. And he said, yeah, okay, that's cool. So I just prayed, and then he said, that was amazing, thank you. And then we just started, we were talking a little bit more, and then just out of nowhere, he launched into prayer in Spanish, just launched into prayer. But instead, whereas when I had prayed, we'd been like this, you know, just, and I was just, when he launched into prayer, he did that. Somebody had a picture before we moved out that we would be sort of dusting off gold, and that the people wouldn't be surprised to re-meet Jesus. And Pampo and Chani have got genuine faiths. It's the real deal. And maybe the future is that we are just going to walk with them and, you know, learn from them and grow with them. We don't know, but we just trust God with it. We don't know what's gonna happen. I've sort of come to a natural windy end, I think.
Right. Fantastic, Dan. I don't know quite where we're going next either. Maybe I'll share a few things, and then we can ask some questions, or we can pray, or we can have dinner together, or something like that. I didn't know either Danny's or Linda's story. I'm struck by the what the calling of God looks like, and how it leads to creative mission when we take our calling seriously. There's grace for the journey, you know. There's grace to be find ourselves in situations that naturally we wouldn't choose, but actually with God there, we couldn't be anywhere else, you know. It would feel wrong to be somewhere else. My story is one of working with students for the last 22 years. I'm based in Loughborough in the UK. I got caught up in a church plant as a student. There's a move of God in one of the halls. My wife was at the heart of that. And seven students stayed around to plant a church because her friends who were finding Jesus weren't finding church. So we had to bridge a culture gap and create a church that students wanted to be part of. That was called Open Heaven, that started 23 years ago. She's senior leader of the church, and I've been based in Loughborough with her since then. But 20 years ago, actually probably 21, 22 years ago, I bumped into a guy called Roger Ellis, and we got talking about students and things nationally, and God had just spoken to me quietly, quiet whisper in a student room about being part of the deal. And so for the last 19 years, I've been full-time trying to outwork a level of calling and creative mission amongst students in the UK, and being stretched more recently into Europe. If I fast forward to Madrid 2 years ago, I was beginning to feel out of my depth in a good way, a tremendous need for prayer. So connecting with friends in 24/7 who I felt I'd journeyed with but not been to too many gatherings in recent years. And probably like quite a few people who happened to be at that gathering, pick something up. I know not which, you know, what it was, you know, that was, I couldn't articulate it, but there was something in terms of God speaking and calling me into fresh adventure with him, maybe fresh pioneering after some difficult years, and blowing away some fears of not wanting to get hurt again or put myself in the line of the enemy, discovering actually that God was, you know, no, there's something more here. By the grace of God, there's more. And over the last 2 years, it's great being here in Geneva. I feel, I don't know about you, but I just feel a tremendous sense of God's hand and God's eyes directed towards Europe. I've got a high level of anticipation for what God is going to be doing right across Europe with students, with churches. I felt in the last couple of years, post-Madrid, God's spoken to me about the next two decades of student work and student mission in Europe. But then at the same time, not necessarily knowing where to start or how to go about it, being quite comfortable in the UK, by no means seeing what we want to see happen. Lots of prayers still out there unanswered, but on one level quite comfortable, things moving forward. But then this continent of Europe, 30 million students, students are the biggest migrating people group on the planet. 5 million of them are studying outside their own home, and 2.5 million, half of them, are landing in Europe to study. So we thought a couple of years ago, wouldn't it be good if we just made a few attempts to act on that? And the idea of, well, the obvious place to start is prayer. And maybe to actually physically be on the soil of some of the university campuses across Europe and just pray and see what happens. And at some doors and some wells and see what happens. But how? How do we do that? And then we thought, well, we need students to do it. We want to summon students to a faith adventure. Often the discipleship bar is so low, a lot of them are disinterested, and so we need to raise it a bit and encourage something more adventurous. I think deep down in many people, there's a yearning and a longing for more adventure. The inward adventure of discipleship and the outward adventure that I think we've heard about, that we get caught up in when we follow God. In Loughborough, they used to do this thing with the Students' Union called Escape and Evade, where students would try and get as far away from the campus as possible and back again in one day on no money. And they'd wear t-shirts and they'd go. And I thought, there's something in this, because loads of students do it and they love it.
Like a Luke 10 journey.
You know what? You're ahead of me.
Sorry.
You're all over it. You're all over it. So we thought Escape and Pray. Inspired by Luke 10, which is probably Luke 10:2 is on our phones. It goes off every day because we're praying for workers. We sense God is stirring up workers. But escape and pray, why not? So we invited students to form themselves in teams of 2, 3, and 4, give us their passport details and £100 each, for which we would get them a return ticket to a university city in Europe with a few provisos. They weren't going to know where they were going until they got to the airport. So at the airport, they'd be given an envelope and they'd open it and they'd find out where they're going to spend the next 48 hours. And there's nothing set up for them. There's no accommodation, there's no nothing. And we gave them 20 euros each and said, you know, if you can, try and survive on this, which means that's not enough. So you're gonna have to pray and, you know. And Ian wanted me to share honestly how that's gone. The first year we ended up sending 35 teams out. In June just gone, we sent 100 teams out. 333 people. It was fantastic. It was a little bit of everything. On the whole, I think it did something on a discipleship level that was really healthy. Students were ending up in situations where they were having to rely on God. They were being stretched. They were praying prayers. And we also trust too that they were affecting the climate in Europe. But probably what was being more affected was what was going on in them and creating and their lives going forward. All kinds of stories. They ended up, you know, not just praying on campuses. A lot of them ended up working with refugees. An awful lot of them ended up ministering to the homeless, praying for people, taking an interest in people. All this was done with zero training, which we are thinking about rectifying for future years for a number of reasons. So it was kind of out there. It was a big experiment. It kind of happened before we had any chance to do any real risk assessment and policy making, which is probably a good thing, because if we had done, we might not have done it. And it's creative mission, and it's sparking, it's not only creative mission in and of itself, it's sparking something and igniting something in those who participate. It wasn't all as I'd want it to be. Some of it I cringed at a little bit because I had to pick up a few pieces with churches across Europe who didn't really know us and were saying, we had this team turn up, what are you doing? They couldn't really explain what they were doing. I'm like, that's not very good. We actually did give them, in the lead up, we wrote 10 devotionals on Luke 10 to lead them through that. If they'd done that, they'd have been better equipped. But we weren't monitoring them in that sense. Some of them, because it's 19-year-old, 20-year-old young people, I imagine it. You know, Jesus may have had similar problems when he sent out the 72 of a range of maturity getting sent out. The great thing is they all came back. There wasn't any major incidents. But there was maturity things, and that's to be expected. And I think, you know, the mature leaders I spoke to in different parts of Europe were very forgiving and understanding, but they were like, you might want to consider this. It was on social media. It was quite fun to watch, the hashtag escape and pray. Some of the lessons we did learn was we'd want, going forward, we wouldn't want them to be a burden to the churches because we were looking to partner with churches. And I think some of them were so desperate to work out where they were staying. Their biggest prayer was, God, help me find accommodation, which is understandable. But it's not what we wanted. So we had a few. We've got a few watchwords or a few phrases that are coming in. You know, you're there to be a blessing, not a burden. So, you know, some of them did sleep rough. Some of them slept in hostels. We'll be doing some training around some of this stuff going forward and making keeping the boundaries. We also kept reminding people that they were pilgrims and not tourists. You know, this wasn't a city break for people. This was a prayer mission adventure. And I guess that for me is a moment in a much greater movement of what God's doing. I think when God calls stuff, we have to get creative and we have to start thinking about, okay, what's going to help move what God's asked us to do and take it forward. So I'm convinced that we're going to see a whole new wave of student mission across Europe, and that God's summoning his church to get involved in student mission in a new way. And this being maybe a little bit of a catalytic event and has opened up some relationships. We were able to invite a number of people we met in June to our gathering back in the UK in Sheffield. And yeah, who knows what happens when we kind of put ourselves in those places and those situations. So that's a little bit of what I think Ian wanted me to share. We've got a little bit of time to reflect together, maybe ask some questions, maybe share some of our own experiences of creative mission. So maybe just chat to the person next to you and share what you've heard from what I've said and what Dan has said, and maybe just reflect some of your own thoughts back or some questions. And
can we ask you questions?
Yes, you can. We can't promise any answers, but you can ask us some questions, yes. So maybe ask questions with each other first. What is it that, again, God's highlighted? What have you noticed? What's stuck out? And
actually praying. Thanks for coming.